Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, Brothers Under God. In a history-making move, a chief Jewish rabbi is invited to address the Synod of Bishops here in the Vatican. European bishops appeal to European governments to intervene to stop ongoing violence against Christians in India. And what Catholic voters should keep in mind as they go to the polls in next month's presidential elections in the United States. For the first time in its history, the Synod of Bishops has invited a chief Jewish rabbi to address its assembly. Over the next 3 weeks, the some 250 Synod Fathers will be reflecting on the Word of God in the life and mission of the Church. On Monday, they heard Rabbi Sher Yashuv Cohen, the chief rabbi of Haifa, Israel, speak about what the Scriptures mean for the Jewish community. Philippa Hitchin caught up with Rabbi Cohen just ahead of his discourse. She asked him how he reacted to the invitation to address the world's Catholic bishops gathered in the Vatican.
Well, there's no doubt that the invitation was not only because what I have to say and to add the information and the knowledge of mainly what Christians call the Old Testament, but the fact that I represent the chief rabbi of Israel as chairman of the Bilateral Commission that was created by the late Pope John Paul II, and I represent the so-called dialogue between the two religions, is maybe the main reason I was invited. I believe it was a step to prove to us that the present leadership of the Vatican intends to continue the line of thought and action of its predecessors, starting from John the 23rd through Paul the VI through John Paul the II, which I believe reached the climax, as I'll say today, in his days. And then there was some doubts what's going to happen now. I believe it's an effort or an attempt on a way of demonstrating that here we are to continue the dialogue and the friendship and association that our predecessors started, which is important. And that's the main reason I came, because it's a very difficult time for me to come. It's the Jewish High Holidays. And I come from one day and go back tomorrow to be with my community on the holiest day of the Jewish year, which is Yom Kippur. But I felt I could not deny the invitation because of what it implies, not because of the subjects that I'm going to discuss, but the very fact that I'm going there to speak before the general leadership of the Catholic religion called all. They tell me the most bishops of the world will be there.
I imagine that your participation here is not accepted by everybody within the Jewish community. How is it being seen, your presence here in Israel and within the broader Jewish community?
I'm here not as an individual presenting my own approach. I represent the Chief Rabbi of Israel, which is the official body that leads the Jewish religion in Israel, in a way, in the Jewish world. So I would say the majority is with me here. There are those who feel that it's more than a dialogue, and they are suspicious that it's an attempt to, in a way, to blur the differences. Just another kind of the same religion, which it's not. Of course, there are basic elements in the articles of faith that we believe in, the Christians believe in, and we cannot ignore it. And I feel that it's not meant to change us. It's meant to say that we should try to understand each other and live together for those principles and for those ideas that join us. And we stem from the same mother or from the same father, Abraham, the patriarch, Abraham Avinu in Hebrew, who was the founder of the three Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And I feel it's important to remember where we come from. We may be able to bring more peace to the world that way, and that is important. And I believe that religion has an influence on the lay leaders of all the states in the world. They need to feel that they are only human beings created by the same God. And the main reason I believe in this dialogue is to promote this kind of an approach after so much bloodshed and sad and painful events that happened only in the recent generation.
And yet, in a way, this focus on the Christian Bible as the fulfillment of God's plan can perhaps serve to highlight the differences. It can cause, in a way, more obstacles than it does serve to highlight the points of unity.
Well, my lecture will be on the Bible, which we call the Tanakh, Torah, prophets and writings, which is what we believe in. I'll not speak about the Christian part of it, the New Testament. And it's clear that that's as far as we can go. Christians are free and they don't need my permission to promote that part of the Bible in which they believe. But the very fact that there is the common background, the beginning, or what you call the old, I think it's not old, it's new, because we believe that it has eternal living. And the very fact that, in spite of the differences, I'm here, I take it as a message that we have the right to exist the way we exist, and nobody denies our right to feel that we are the people that had the covenant with God that brought to the world the entire Bible. When I say the entire Bible, I mean, of course, the Tanakh in which we believe. But, of course, you cannot forget that those that created the other parts that the Christians believe in were also Jews. And we may not agree with their ideas, but that doesn't make it that we are not Jewish and they were not Jewish. And if you remember that, you cannot hate the people that come from the same origin from the Holy Land. So I don't think it's going to blur or to try to erase the differences. It's different but equal.
In your address, you talk about the way that the scriptures are at the heart of the Jewish faith, how children from a very young age learn the scriptures by heart. I imagine that this, in a way, could serve, there could be many lessons here for the Christian church, which has seen such a drop-off of people learning, studying, and appreciating the Bible.
I guess that is the intention of His Holiness that invited me. I'm sure he's aware of it, because if you open the Jewish prayer book, what we call the Siddur, from the beginning to the end, it's built around quotations from the Bible. And of course, Christian service, as far as I know, is also built around mostly from chapters from Psalms. So in a way, I may be saying it, I don't know, I cannot speak for those who invited me, you have to ask them. But I think it's a message to the Christians. You see what the way they feel about the Bible, that's the way you should feel about your Bible. You should behave like them, teach your children, read it, repeat it, learn it by heart, make it part of your culture. And like poetry is cited by heart, by people who love it, and it speaks to their soul, not only to the body. So in a way, it may promote for Christians their approach to the Bible. I don't see anything bad about it. I think that is positive. And as I say, not all Jews are so devout to the Bible, but even the secular Jews who are not observant as far as their daily life with the details of religion that we Orthodox Jews believe in, they still teach Bible. And I'm mentioning today in my lecture that even the State of Israel, as part of its independence celebrations every year, on the day of the independence, which is a national feast, has a biblical quiz, a contest for children and young adults from all over the world. And the winners come to a ceremony, and the president of the state, the prime minister, and all the leaders of the state are there to honor them. So it's part of the national culture, not only of the religion. And it should be that way in all those countries that believe in one God and who created the human being in his image.
During the synod, there will also be an important commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the death of Pius XII, the Pope who still arouses such strong emotions on both sides about the role he played during the Second World War. What are your views on this Pope right now?
Being frank, I did not know about it before I came. I only learned about it yesterday. I feel that we should not ignore the pain and the sad memories. So many victims of the Holocaust who are still around, at least the children survivors have, who feel, maybe rightly so, maybe I don't know, that not enough was done by the church to prevent the Holocaust. I understand that the leadership of the church said that the late Pope did try to save as much as he could. It should be proved, it should be made more public, but there's no doubt that he did not raise his voice in public, maybe because he was afraid, because there was a danger that Nazis were against the Christian church as well. Who is to become a judge? God is the judge. But we are very unhappy about it, and we feel that chapter in our sad history should be set aside, and it's a mistake to try to forget it. As I say, I was surprised by it. Maybe, I don't know, I cannot say that our leadership would not have agreed to my participation if they knew about it before. But of course, I didn't feel like canceling my coming because I don't want the leadership of the church to feel that we are not interested in the dialogue anymore. So these are two separate chapters. It so happened by coincidence. And I hope that the leadership of the church will refrain from anything that make anybody feel bad, bring to him pain, sorrow, and heartache. Unfortunately, the memory of those years does it for us as Jews. You know that when there was some discussion about making him a saint, there was strong opposition. Let me just say, the feeling is that that chapter in Christian history and European history should not be forgotten. And as I say, unless those who represent the victims, the children, the families, feel differently, the feeling in Israel is not for sanctifying his name and his memory and so on. It's an internal Christian affair. I can only give an advice. I cannot tell them what to do. But there is a very sensitive general feeling among the majority of Jews in this connection because of the unprecedented event of the Holocaust. If you go to Jerusalem, to Yad Vashem, that is the memorial for the Holocaust, where Pope Paul John II went and prayed, there is a whole wall that records the fact that the European world and its leadership did not rise up to the challenge to try to fight it stronger than it did. Although we cannot ignore the fact that many individuals have been saved. So it's a very mixed feeling, and I don't feel I'm in the position to give judgment.
So how will Rabbi Cohen remember this landmark meeting in the Vatican? Let's listen to what he had to say to journalists.
I feel that somehow I'm sanctifying the name of the Lord of God by doing it, because Judaism is built around bringing a message to the world, and there's no doubt that this synod represents so many countries and so many believers. It's an unusual opportunity. Why am I chosen to bring that message, and will I succeed? I pray that I will, but I'm not sure. But it's certainly not a usual mission, and I pray to God that I'll succeed in bringing the message in its original form, from the Bible, through the Jewish prayer, through the hope for the days to come, in which I hope to end. How to end my lecture with a quotation from Isaiah about the days to come when the lamb and the wolf will be together and people will not live absurd to each other. that is the spirit in which I will bring. And I thank God for keeping me alive and bringing me here to be part of such an event, which is no doubt making history.
And a very warm thanks there to the Chief Rabbi of Haifa, Israel, Sher Yashuv Cohen. Some 30 to 50,000 Christians have fled their homes in the Indian state of Orissa in fear for their lives. Many have taken refuge in the forests of Orissa and are now in desperate need of shelter, food, and medical assistance.
La situazione in India è tragica. Ogni giorno avvengono assassini di persone costringendole a cambiare religione.
Father Bernardo Cervalera, director of the Pontifical Missions Asia News Online Daily, told Vatican Radio that the situation in India is tragic. Every day, he says, killings and beatings are going on to force people to convert from Christianity back to Hinduism. Many are the martyrs who have already given their lives because they refused to change their religion. The violence erupted in late summer when radical Hindu nationalists accused Christians of killing one of their leaders. Since then, Christian homes, businesses, and schools have been burnt to the ground, and hundreds of people targeted by angry mobs. The terrible irony, says Father Cervalera, is that this bloodshed, this sacrifice, is totally unjustified, because a Maoist group in Orissa has claimed responsibility for the murder of the Hindu leader. While European bishops' conferences have made an urgent appeal to European governments for rapid intervention to end the violence against Christians in Orissa, the Archbishop of Cuttack Bhubaneswar in Orissa, Raphael Chinath, told Chris Altieri that the state government's response to the violence has been entirely inadequate and even shows signs of cooperation with the perpetrators.
The attack on Christians in Kandamal district, which began on 24th of August, is still going on. And the state administration, state as well as center, have sent a lot of troops to check this and to establish peace and harmony and to bring the culprits to books. Unfortunately, the situation at present is out of control. In the sense, the miscreants are moving freely and doing whatever they want. To tell you the truth, there is hardly anything that they have not destroyed. So now they are moving and attacking anybody who coming into that area. So the entire district, the Christian population is practically out of the district. The 40 to 50,000 displaced persons are there. You can call them refugees. The state government itself has set up 13 to 14 relief camps. And in one of the relief camps in the beginning, there were more than 4,000 people. Very congested existence they had. And now they have also three relief camps in coastal line, Bhubaneswar. That is, the distance between these two is more than 300 kilometers. So the people have traveled from there to Bhubaneswar because they found their living in Kandamal district is very dangerous. And therefore, they left their home, their property, their relations, everything. And whatever they could gather, they have come. But there is not much to gather because they have burned everything. And therefore, they have come just almost empty-handed. And they have been here in three different refugee camps. We are looking after them. And they say, in Bhubaneswar and in the vicinity, in the surroundings, there must be at least 10,000 refugees in refugee camps with their friends, in rented houses, and maybe also in the railway station and the roads.
Archbishop Chinath, it's an extremely thorough portrait of how things are in Kandamal district and elsewhere. But there's something that I'm having a hard time getting my head around myself, and that is with all of these security forces being deployed, how is it that the violence continues? I mean, are they completely ineffective? Are they turning a blind eye? Do they not have the right sort of rules of engagement? What is the situation?
There are a number of things to be considered. First of all, the administration for a number of years turned a blind eye to what is happening in the state. Namely, this Sangh Parivar that consists of RSS, BJP, and RSS, Vishwendu Parishad, and Bajrang Dal. These are radical revolutionary outfits of the Sangh Parivar, all the Hindu fundamentalist groups. And they have been given a free hand all these years. And they are grown stronger and they are multiplied. And now all the political parties used them for their own end. And now they have become so strong, it is not easy to control them. Secondly, when the trouble began, there was a gross negligence from the part of the administration. And if I am not mistaken, there was a kind of understanding between the Sangh Parivar, these miscreants, and the fundamentalist groups and the state administration that don't take any serious actions. I cannot simply prove this one, but the fact all the in December as well as now, the police force, I would say the police force of the local policemen, they were just witnesses in every case. In not one case we could see the police in active to prevent the miscreants doing these criminal activities. And from that, my conclusion is that why the police force, which is supposed to protect the people, to protect the properties of the citizens, are dumb and not active at all. So this only tells me that there was a secret understanding between the Sangh Parivar as well as the state government. Don't take any serious actions because they have a political mileage, political gain in this. Because next year the election is coming, 2009, April, May, the elections will be announced. And so they are preparing themselves just like Modi government prepared himself in Gujarat, allowing 2,000 Muslims to be slaughtered and 50 or 60 churches been destroyed. And after the election, he won with a thumping majority. And this is what my own observation. Why the state government is letting this go. On the other hand, I remember two officers, one officer in charge of a police station who tried to prevent the people desecrating the church. The very same night he was transferred and suspended. Another SP, superintendent of police, who did not bow down to the demand of the Hindu fundamentalists, this, especially the Swami before his death, he demanded arrest of some people and he did not bow down to it. And also he questioned the rioters, why did you attack the house of the Jesuits where they had nothing to do with the killing of the cows. And for that he was suspended. So from this all I understand that they let it go out of hand. Now it is certainly beyond their control, and therefore I would say the situation is simply out of control.
Archbishop Raphael Chinath of Cuttack Bhubaneswar, Orissa. While speaking to reporters in New Delhi this week, India's steel minister Ram Vilas Paswan said the situation in Orissa has deteriorated so badly that the central government should seriously consider allowing the federal executive to take over police powers within Orissa state. And we here at Vatican Radio on our news and features programs will do our best to keep you up to date to what is going on with the Christian community there in Orissa, India. And now, our weekly appointment with experts for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, ahead of U.S. presidential elections next month. Today, Emer McCarthy talks to Father Brian Bransfield, a specialist with the Bishop's Secretariat of Evangelization and Catechesis. He calls U.S. Catholic voters to remember the root of all good in the universe and the fundamental evil that suggests that human life is an optional.
The bishops lay down several basic principles. The first is, those who knowingly, willingly, and directly support public policies or legislation that undermines fundamental moral principles, such as the right to life, they would cooperate with evil. At the same time, with existing unjust laws, it might be possible to restore justice only partially or gradually. So the bishops say a Catholic cannot vote for a candidate who takes a position in favor of an intrinsic evil, such as abortion, such as racism, if the voter's intent is to support that position. In such cases, a Catholic would be guilty of formal cooperation in grave evil. The application of conscience is very difficult, the bishops acknowledge, and the bishops say there may be times, only rare times, a Catholic who rejects a candidate's unacceptable position may decide to vote for that candidate for other morally grave reasons. But voting in that way would be possible only for truly grave moral reasons, not to advance a narrow interest, not to advance partisan preferences, or to ignore fundamental moral evil. Therefore, voting that way should be exceedingly rare and only for grave moral reasons, and only after considerable guidance has been sought to internalize the virtue of prudence, understanding, reasoning, docility before the Church's teaching. Only after prayer, consultation with Scripture and the teaching of the Church. All those activities provide a third way, a new way. And so the Catholic has to continually seek the formation of the conscience, particularly on abortion, because it is so basic and so fundamental that even when one begins to approach material cooperation, incidental cooperation, one must be very, very careful because of the great evil that abortion is.
Will abortion be one of the main issues, do you feel, as voters go to the polls?
I think abortion is always a main issue because it is the fundamental right to life. If we do not get abortion right, we will not get anything else right. If we do not get the right to life right and vote against abortion, it's very hard to get anything else right. If we claim that we are in favor of fixing health care, but we argue in favor of abortion, that's a contradiction, because abortion is the basic right to life. And so, whether consciously or unconsciously, abortion is a very foundational issue that faces everyone, whether they're aware of it or not, because it is the fundamental right to life.
Father Brian Bransfield is a specialist with the U.S. Bishop's Secretariat of Evangelization and Catechesis. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.